This is The Guardian.
Today, what if China could change the way the world thinks about coal?
The first thing you notice when you're in coal country is the smell. The sulfur in the air is noticeable the minute you step out of the plane in the airport. And then in the old style mining towns across the north of China is the coal dust everywhere in the towns, just like it used to be in the valleys of Wales and so on many years ago.
In 2009, when John Watts was The Guardian's Beijing correspondent, he made a reporting trip to Ordos in Inner Mongolia, China's coal country. What he found has stayed with him ever since. Not just the soot-covered sites, but the shiny new mines that seemed incredibly futuristic, despite still being hopelessly stuck in the past.
It was very, very impressive. Everything new, everything very modern. The mine itself was cleaner, wider than the London Underground. We drove many miles up to the coal face, and almost everything was automated.
In the control room, Wang shows me the automated system that produces more than 10 million tons of coal a year with just 300 miners.
As you can probably tell, that's 2009, John, in a film he made about his trip.
Next to the mine were two big processing plants, one to liquefy coal so that it could be used as fuel for vehicles.
The fuel made here is an engineer's dream and an environmentalist nightmare. Liquid coal is cheaper than oil, but the greenhouse gas emissions are 50 to 100% higher.
And the other to try to capture coal, kind of a pilot project. Even now, more than 10 years later, I can picture the sunset and this array of metallic pipes. It was very, very sci-fi, and a lot of this technology was completely cutting edge. And at the time, China saw this as the future.
More than a decade on, John is The Guardian's global environment editor. And last week, he reported on China making a big move towards a different future. President Xi Jinping announced that Beijing would stop funding coal projects around the world. It's huge news, but at the same time, China is still part of the problem.
China is by far, the biggest contributor of greenhouse gases in the world. So yes, I think in the last 10 years, there's more renewables, there's more concern about the health impacts, the environmental impacts, the cost. And so there has been a shift, but it is still very gradual. And I think that's why this announcement by Xi has really cheered a lot of people, because it signals that China has started to try to clean up at home. And now it's at last recognizing that actually, as a member of the global community, it's got to encourage other countries to decarbonize as well.
That's how much power China has to shape what the rest of the world does. And that's why, ahead of November's crucial COP26 climate summit in Glasgow, experts say that this funding decision is major news. But they have a lot of questions too. The biggest one of all. If China can help the developing world give up coal, is it ready to do the same thing at home? From The Guardian, I'm Nosheen Iqbal. Today in Focus, how China fed the world's addiction to coal and how it's trying to give it up. John Watts, you're The Guardian's global environment editor, and you spent nearly a decade reporting from Beijing. We're speaking after China's President Xi Jinping made an announcement at the United Nations last week that caused quite a reaction. What exactly did he say?
He said two very important things. Firstly, that China will no longer provide funds for overseas coal plants.
中国将大力支持发展中国家 能源绿色低碳发展。
And second, that instead it will put much more effort and money into promoting renewable energy overseas. This is something that climate activists and scientists have been hoping for a very long time, because China is and has been for a long time the king of coal.
Why is it such a big deal?
This is a big deal, firstly, because coal is the biggest problem for the climate. It has been for 200 years. It's the number one target for any climate activist in the world. Secondly, it's because it's coming from China. And China is the world's biggest coal user by far. And it's the main source of funding for other countries that want to invest in coal power plants. Countries such as Bangladesh or Pakistan, Vietnam, Indonesia, Serbia, many places in Africa. Most other countries started industrializing with coal and they want to follow the same path.
The story of coal begins 250 years ago, when British inventors realized you could heat water with coal to make steam, spin turbines, and power machines. The Industrial Revolution created machines, lots of them. It led to a global boom in prosperity that was unprecedented in human history.
But China's now sort of choking off the biggest pipeline of coal funding that there is in the world.
I mean, instinctively, most of us know that the world has to phase out fossil fuels if we're to save the planet. But what is it in particular about coal that makes it such a high priority offender?
When you're burning coal, you're almost burning pure carbon. So its greenhouse gas effect is very strong. You have the secondary effects of incredibly bad air pollution in some regions, including high levels of sulfur, which leads to acid rain. But mainly it's just the sheer quantity of the stuff. People always talk about, well, there's limited supplies of oil and limited supplies of gas. Nobody ever said there's limited supplies of coal. We could keep burning coal for hundreds of years. So it's always tempting to return to coal, but we absolutely do need to phase it out as quickly as possible. And then, or even at the same time, focus very hard on phasing out other fossil fuels, such as oil and gas.
Yeah, at the same time, China is leading in renewable energy. It's become the world's largest producer of solar and wind power. So why has it been spending so much on funding coal projects around the world?
There's a number of reasons why China's held on for this long. The first one is that it's kind of self-interest. As China's tried to clean up at home and create what Xi Jinping has called a beautiful China, as they've been doing that at home, they've been exporting a lot of their capacity in coal-fired power plants, coal mining technology, and so on, to other countries. And this is exactly what most developed countries have done at some point. You stop using the dirtiest stuff at home and you export it overseas. And China's been doing the same. And that's been a big part of what they call the Belt and Road Initiative. It's the biggest overseas infrastructure spending plan that the world's ever seen, certainly bigger than the Marshall Plan at the end of the Second World War.
The Belt and Road Initiative basically weaves together lots of projects. It could be China building things from scratch, upgrading existing infrastructure, handing out loans, or making investments. There are overland routes that connect China to Central and South Asia, the Middle East, and Europe. That's the belt. It includes what's called the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor.
So that's one reason, just to help their own domestic economy. Secondly, it's for geopolitical reasons. Especially in Asia, but all over the world, China's trying to increase its influence, particularly amongst developing nations. Those nations want more energy production, and so they're looking for funding. And in the past, they would look to the World Bank or maybe Japan or Korea. And those pipelines have gradually been choked off. And China's been there saying, look, we can offer you the funds you need. We can help you develop. We're not going to make all these difficult conditions on you increasing your energy supply. So we're there for you. And it's a way of building up influence in other countries. In addition, there's quite a strong lobby for coal in China. Many parts of the country, including Ordos and Inner Mongolia, are dependent on coal still. And so there's a lot of people there that don't want to move away.
Coal is cheap and China is self-sufficient, and that creates a dependency. It's firmly entrenched, and much of China's business and political elites are making billions from it.
But that balance is changing, and as you say, China is now a massive exporter of renewables.
These wind turbine blades span a mammoth 91 metres, or almost the length of a football field. No easy feat to build, and this factory produces 24 of such blades each month. But from the middle of this year, its capacity is set to double as it builds more production lines to meet China's growing demand to produce more wind energy. China already generated the most wind power capacity last year, almost tripling 2019 levels.
And I think this announcement seems to suggest that the leadership in Beijing recognise that their future is in renewables and not in coal.
If countries in the developing world do still want money for coal projects, have they got any options?
The big international institutions such as the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund announced that they would stop coal funding several years ago. South Korea has made strong moves in that direction in the past year. Japan has moved a long way, not quite completely cutting everything, but almost in the last couple of years too. And so really China is the last holdout and the biggest holdout. So the fact that it's now taking this move means that there really isn't much on the table for any country that wants to move into coal. If they want money for it, if they want state loans for it, then they basically have to go to the private sector, which is very, very expensive. And in fact, now I think many countries will find it's cheaper for them to have wind or solar power plants.
So will that be happening? Where coal power is central to projects that had already been planned, will China be likely to partner and work with countries and offer them greener solutions?
This is a really big question. And it's one of the reasons why some green groups are still rather cautious about welcoming China's announcement, because we don't know when this is going to start. So if it's 5 years from now, that's no good at all. Even 2 years from now might be too late. So they really want this to start straight away. And then there's the question about at what stage does a project have to be for it to go ahead or to be stopped? So if the contract's already signed, does that mean the project has to now go ahead? If there's advanced negotiations, does that mean this project is closed? So I could imagine that a lot of China's partners in the world will be wondering, well, how exactly is this going to work? And what happened to that project that we've been discussing all this time? And if that's not going to go ahead, what are we going to do next? But I can't imagine that China won't have thought about this and be considering something else, because it really does value its geostrategic influence and it doesn't want other countries to say they were abandoned.
So, John, what else did she say at that summit?
She also reconfirmed several previous commitments that China has made. The most important of those is that it has promised to go net zero by 2060. So that's 10 years after the US and the UK and more developed countries, which is a bone of contention because most of the world actually would like China to decarbonize far more quickly. But China argues, well, we're a developing country, we're a big country, we need more time.
So, John, you've explained just how big a deal it is for China to move away from funding these coal projects around the world. What about at home? How important is it still to the domestic economy?
China is more reliant on coal than any other country. And that's worrying because China is the most populous country in the world. It's reached this stage because it has abundant resources and they're easy to extract, and the country has been in a hurry to develop because, of course, it started its economic development, or at least it got into full swing quite late, and particularly in the last 30 years it's been in super catch-up mode, and coal has been what's powered the fastest economic expansion the world has ever seen. And it's thanks to horrible dirty Chinese coal that we Western consumers have been able to have ridiculously priced cheap Chinese goods. So it's all connected.
Mm.
But coal has allowed this to happen. But now we're seeing the consequences. But just to get a scale of the challenge it faces, even within its borders, it has more than 1,000 coal mines.
Blimey.
And that's a huge workforce. So you've got to close them all down. You've got to close down all the coal-fired power plants that are connected to them. You've got to find jobs for all the people who lose their jobs. And you've got to find other sources of energy to make sure that everybody's lights stay on and that you've got enough electricity to power homes and industry. So it's an extraordinary challenge. But then again, it's an extraordinary challenge for every country.
What about going forward? I mean, like, China's made this very clear commitment now to the world that no more coal power plants. We're not going to finance them. We're not going to be building them. But what about at home? Are there still plans to build more?
This is a very controversial and political issue, even within China, because China had been making steady progress. Generally speaking, over the last 10 years, the volume of coal production, or at least the percentage of the economy that was reliant on coal production, had started to go down. But after COVID and the pandemic and the economic shock of the lockdown, the governments, and especially regional governments within China, just wanted to get the economy going as quickly as possible, regardless of the consequences. And a horribly large number of them thought, well, we know how to do that. We just build more coal power. And that's what they've done. And so there's been this horrible bounce back in the last year that's been more coal driven than anybody would want. The hope is that it increasingly makes economic sense to switch to renewables. And as we've seen in the UK with this problems with the sudden spike in gas prices, wind and solar can be a lot more stable and reliable than relying on a commodity where the prices spike up and down quite dramatically sometimes.
So given that, is there a domestic pushback to coal then?
In China, it's hard to say there's a domestic pushback just because the way the political system works doesn't really allow for much public opposition. But there is very clearly an increasing body of scientific evidence, increasingly strong reports issued by environmental NGOs, as well as a lot of criticism from overseas, that coal is doing more harm to China than it's doing good. And the other thing I haven't mentioned before is the incredible traffic that coal causes in China. China's roads in the north are just coal trucks and coal trucks and coal trucks going from Inner Mongolia, which is deep inland, out to the ports so that it can be shipped to other parts of China. I was once in a traffic jam that lasted a week, and it was almost all coal trucks going from one region to the other.
And what about air pollution? How big a problem is that in China?
Particularly in Beijing, the smog problems when I were there were horrendous. Some of the lowest air quality in the world at the time. Many, many Chinese cities suffered from this problem.
Somewhere in that smog in central Beijing, parents come to pick up kids at Qijia Primary School. The mask, a required school supply. If I don't wear it, she says, the air is smelly and dirty. It hurts my throat. Yeah, but that's the price we pay for a growing economy, says her father.
And their residents are unhappy about this. There's been complaints as much as you can complain in China. There was some very powerful TV shows aired on Chinese television about this that helped to change opinions. So yes, there has been a lot more awareness, and that awareness has led to calls for change about smog. But when it comes to the health of local communities in the mining belt, there are very serious problems that haven't properly been discussed. And I think this is largely to do with the way China kind of suppresses dissent on anything. It doesn't like organized dissent. It doesn't like individual claimants to kind of get together and form a group. So you have terrible breathing problems amongst many former miners or many people who live close to mines where there's a lot of dust. But this hasn't ever, I think, been properly explored. And I've never seen a large organized resistance against it.
Coming up, can China meet its development goals while being environmentally responsible? Going ahead to look at China and coal in the future, despite being considered among the richest countries in the world, China still considers itself a developing country. Why is that?
Most people would probably now characterise China more as an emerging economy. So not exactly a poor developing nation, but certainly not yet a very, very rich country like the United States or many countries in Europe. It's somewhere in between. The thing is, China is so large that there's huge contrast between a city like Shanghai, where it's at least as modern, probably even more modern than a Tokyo or a New York or a London. And then you've got smaller villages in, say, Inner Mongolia or Heilongjiang, where the situation is completely different. And there are a lot of people that still are at a sort of developing country level. The other reason is it's politically expedient, because this way China can stay with its old allies. It's always kind of been a leader of the developing world, and it's been comfortable there. And it enables China to argue that, well, we need more time and we need more space to grow, because we're not yet at the level that you are in the rich world, and we deserve that. And there's a good argument for that.
And is it fair to say that that growth is very much tied up in its relationship to coal?
Growth over the last 30 years has been totally tied up with coal. And efforts now are to decarbonize the economy and decouple growth and carbon emissions. And that is the challenge that China faces in the years ahead. It's the challenge it's tried to deal with very mixed results in the last, say, 10 years in particular. And in a sense, it's one of the most important challenges that the world faces, because if China can't do it, the rest of us are screwed.
Realistically, nobody's expecting China to give up its superpower ambitions. But is it possible for it to keep growing and be greener?
I think it is. I think in things like healthcare and life expectancy and child mortality and infrastructure development, China's already made enormous strides. And if you just measure everything purely by GDP, yes, maybe you just continue to burn coal forever and your economy keeps growing, and yet you live in an environment that is increasingly uninhabitable. So it depends on what is quality of life. And this is a huge debate, not just in China, but everywhere. Are we just going to grow, have more and more material goods? Or are we going to think that quality of life is in fact about having some green spaces nearby, having fresh air to breathe, having clean water to drink, having fertile soil to plant our crops in, and having something to leave to the next generation that's better rather than worse than the one we inherited? And those questions are being asked all over the world, including in China. 20 years ago, Communist Party cadres, when they were evaluated, they were evaluated on how much GDP growth they'd helped to increase. Today, they're evaluated on lots of other things. Yes, a little bit on GDP, but also how has your tree planting in your area gone? How has air quality improved? So there is this sense that development and growth aren't just about GDP. And China is, I think, already well past that point.
And given the numerous headlines this story has generated, do you feel like it's an indication of a real commitment to tackling climate change? By which I mean, is it a PR move, or do you think because China is genuinely worried about the future of the planet?
I think it's a bit of both. China does realise that climate change is a major threat to itself. China's horribly affected by rising temperatures, by water shortages, and many other of the problems that are associated with the climate crisis.
Communities here in Datong have been destroyed by rampant coal mining. The water table has been poisoned and the land subsided.
What is happening in China? The country is battling the heaviest rainfall in 1,000 years. At least 33 people have lost their lives and many are...
But an above-average rise in temperatures here has caused a dramatic decline in the Yulong Shuishan. The glacier is retreating by 27 metres a year.
It knows something has to be done. It's in a very intense political negotiation with other major powers, particularly the United States, about how to share the responsibility of dealing with this problem. It's in that negotiation, I think, with great sincerity, but it is trying to negotiate the best possible deal for itself.
This announcement has come on the back of the US pledging aid to poorer nations, helping them to switch to cleaner energy.
In April, I announced the United States will double our public international financing to help developing nations tackle the climate crisis. And today, I'm proud to announce that we'll work with the Congress to double that number again, including for adaptation efforts. This will make the United States a leader in public climate finance.
Is there a sense that climate change policy is now being used as a tool by the major world leaders to achieve their foreign policy goals?
Climate change has always been used as a tool by major powers to achieve their foreign policy goals. For the most part, it's been a lot about false promises, unfortunately, for much of the last 20 or 30 years. Rich countries are always promising to give money to help poor countries to decarbonize. They have singularly failed a lot of the time to give everything they've promised. So it's very welcome that the United States made this announcement that there will be more money available. It's still not enough, not nearly enough, just like China's decision is welcome and significant, but it's not nearly enough. And China has to go a lot further with concrete action to cut its own emissions and to reduce its own dependency on coal. So it's progress, but to achieve the goals set in the Paris Climate Treaty, all governments need to step up much more. And that's what COP26 in Glasgow is meant to be about. Countries coming forward and saying, okay, we made this commitment before. We realized that wasn't good enough. We need to be more ambitious. We're going to give a better target. We're going to do more.
So, John, how likely do you think that is?
At the moment, I'm quite pessimistic. But at least with these two announcements by China, by the United States, there is a little momentum. And I hope all countries can build on that.
John, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was John Watts. Do read all his brilliant reporting on the global environment, including a new piece on deep sea mining called Race to the Bottom at theguardian.com. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Courtney Youssef. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Archie Bland and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.